Before we begin with this week's shiur specifically, which is going to be our shiur on Parshas Noach, I want to start by introducing what we are going to be doing this year in this series. This series is called 3D Torah. It's a cute name, but what we are going to be doing this year is we are going to be addressing questions in the Parsha from three different perspectives. But the name 3D is not just a cutesy way of saying three perspectives. Our goal is going to be to add depth, that in the same way when we add dimensions, what we're doing is we're adding different perspectives and we're adding the ability to see things in different ways. That's what we are going to be doing this year and this year. But I think that that's something that we take for granted, that we can answer every question that comes up in the Parsha in so many different ways. Let me tell you a quick question before we read through a few sources. Not a question. Let me tell you a quick story that happened to me. When I was teaching in my high school classroom, this was 3-4 years ago, I was teaching 10th grade students. And we were learning, what were we learning? Bamidbar. So we were discussing one of the questions that comes up in Sefer Bamidbar. I forget exactly what it was at the moment, but one of my students asked and said, how can it be that so many different Mefarshim present so many different opinions? What's going to happen if we think like that person? Like, let's say we agree with Rashi. Rashi says such and such an opinion, and we agree with Rashi, and Rashi was wrong, and really the Ramban was correct when there's a machloket between Rashi and Ramban. And I said to her, it's not necessarily that one answer is correct while the other answer is incorrect. It's that we are meant to look at it from different perspectives. And she was still so confused. But what I want to do today is say, honestly, her question was valid. How do we know that we're even allowed to suggest these different opinions? What happens if one were to agree with Rashi? And really, Rashi was incorrect. Is it possible, first of all, that he was incorrect? Are these opinion questions? And are we really meant to delve into Torah in this way? Are we supposed to be on a search for truth, on the true understanding of what it means in the Pasuk? Or are we able to explore Parsha in this way, in sort of exploring different options and taking from each of them what we find to be most meaningful? So the Or HaChaim, in his explanation on Bereishis Aleph Aleph, now I think it's relevant that he is addressing the first Pasuk in the Torah, because the first Pasuk in the Torah has probably more explanations and more opinions on it than any other Pasuk in the Torah. When I was in Stern College for Women, I took a course with Dr. Michelle Levine, who is an absolutely brilliant professor. And we studied, it was supposed to be a course on Parshas Bereishis. Let's just say we did not get past Pasuk Dalet. And I think 3/4 of the semester was spent on Pasuk Aleph. So the Or HaChaim is discussing in Bereishis Aleph Aleph, before we even start out in this pasuk, in which there are so many different opinions, what exactly we're doing here by trying to explain the Torah in different ways. So the Or HaChaim says, Da ki reshut lanu netuna lefarish mashma'ud haktuvim benetivot ha'ian v'yeshuv hada'at hagam shekad moninu rishonim v'yeshvu be'ofen acher. He says, we have the permission, reshut netuna lanu, we were given the permission to explain the meaning of the pasuk in different ways and to delve into it into different depths, even if shekadmunu harishonim, the rishonim came before us and explained it in a different way. Ki ayin panim la-Torah, there are 70 faces to the Torah, ve'in anu muzharim shelo lintot midevrei harishonim. We are not warned that we shouldn't disagree with those that came before us. Ella b'pirushim sheyishtaneh hadin lifneihem. The only time where we would say you are not allowed to differ with somebody who came before you is when it comes to something that is impactful in the world of practical halacha. For example, v'lazet himtza sheha'amoraim in kach b'hem lichlok al hatanaim b'mishpatei Hashem. When it comes to the Mishnah and the Gemara, the Amoraim, who are the authors of the Gemara, are unable to disagree with the Tanaim, who are the authors of the Mishnah. Because we do believe in Shalshalat HaMesorah, that the Mesorah, the tradition, is passed down from one generation to the next. And therefore, when it comes to a matter of practical halacha, we believe that the previous generation was closer to the source, closer to the original information, and therefore someone who came later cannot disagree with someone who came before. Aval b'yeshuv haktuvim b'mashma utan, matzinu lahem b'kama mekomot sheyfarshu b'ofen acher. But we have found that when it comes to giving our opinions, giving our explanations, explanation to the psukim, trying to understand the psukim in different ways, we are able to give a different opinion from anyone else who came before us. If anyone has ever seen, they sell in Mayasharim, they sell in many different Sfarim stores, the Chidushi Torah notebooks, that these look like beautiful Sfarim on the outside, but in the inside, they are blank notebooks. And the point of them is that every person up until today can have Chidushi Torah, that we can be reading through something and we can write down our own thoughts, our own explanations, and our own ideas. So Kal v'chomer, of course, we are able to study the Psukim from all of these different perspectives that we are going to do. There is no idea of there is one correct opinion on the pasuk, and everything else is just a guess. Rather, shivim panem la-Torah, there are 70 faces to the Torah. And just lastly, before we delve into our actual topic for today, I want to share with you a beautiful imagery provided by the Sefer HaChinuch for what we are going to be doing in this share series this year. Yadua hadavar u'mefarsim bininu ha'am mekable ha-mitzvos ki shivim panem la-Torah. He says it is a widely accepted fact by all that believe in Torah and mitzvos that there are 70 faces to the Torah. U'b'chol achad meham shorashim gedolim v'rabim. And each one of them has many roots. V'l'kol shorash v'shorash anafim. And each root has a branch. Kol achad yisa eshkol gadol shal pirot nechpadim lahaskil avavot. To those who have curious hearts, to those who really pay attention to it, each one of them bears a beautiful bunch of fruits for one to think about. Yom yom yotian parach l'shoktim aleihem. Every single day they give forth beautiful fruits to those who spend time thinking about them. Prachei chachma v'seichel tov. They provide us with wisdom and understanding. Kol inayim me'irot v'rachavan v'nisva amok chachmata ad she'in koch ba'adam la'asig tchilata. If we really meditate on it and we really think about all of these different shorashim, all these different roots and all these different branches and all these different fruits every single day, it will expand and grow to a point at which we cannot even understand any longer what it is coming to teach us. That the knowledge that is held within the Shivim Panim LaTorah is so expansive that it is way beyond what we are ever able to imagine. But I love this imagery of having so many roots, that there are so many different ways to pick up from the psukim. And there are so many branches. There are so many ways to give out from the Torah that it is truly a beautiful parach tov v'peirot na'im. These are beautiful fruits and beautiful flowers for us to glean from the Torah. So Mirtz Hashem, our goal today, Hashem svatai titach lufi agiti latacha. May Hashem give me the ability to understand from the shorashim and try to share out some of these beautiful pirut so that we can understand the true knowledge, wisdom, and understanding that is contained within the Torah. So with that, let us delve into our topic today. A number of weeks ago, maybe it was a few months ago, years ago, I don't know. With Yontif, I'm still unclear what day of the week it is, but I think it was a few weeks ago. I was listening to the 1840 podcast with Rabbi David Beshefkin, and he was interviewing Rabbi Shace Taub. And he asked Rabbi Taub, he said, "Where does your name come from?" And she says, "Well, Adam and Chava, you know, they had three sons, Cain, Hevel, and Shace." And Rabbi Beshefkin was like, "Oh, I did not even think about that." Like these names that come, and he said the word antediluvian names are so not names that we think of regularly. And that led to them, I don't know, they had a whole conversation about antediluvian names. So me being not such a wordsmith, I Googled what antediluvian meant. And it is an adjective that means of or belonging to the time before the biblical flood. Who knew there was a specific word and adjective used to describe things that came before the flood of Noah? However, there's also a humorous explanation, which means that when you use the word antediluvian, it means something is ridiculously old-fashioned. And while obviously we're not calling Adam and Chava ridiculously old-fashioned, but I think that it is quite relevant that we are starting our share series with Parshas Noach and not with Parshas Bereishis. I think within Bereishis, there is so much deep Torah and so much that we can learn, but it is from a world that is completely unrelatable to what we imagine in our world today, what we experience in our world today. That once we reach the point of Noah, even pre-flood, even though it's antediluvian, but mostly post-flood, we have now entered into a world that is in many ways, much more similar to the world that we are in today. Obviously, we are unable to still imagine many of the ways that they lived back then, but it is much more similar, a world of trial and error, a world of struggle, a world of conflict, a world of connecting to Hashem. These are all things that antediluvian, pre the flood, were all seen in a much different way, and post-flood are much more relatable to how we live today. So I think it is apropos that we start with Parshas Noach in a world that we can really glean lessons that are much more applicable to our life today. Not that Bereishis is not applicable, but it is just so different from how we experience life today that making the connections is an extra step further. So with no further ado, our question for today. So let's delve into the beginning of Parshas Noach. Where are we at the beginning of Noach? V'tishachid ha'aretz lifnei ha'elokim, v'temalei ha'aretz chamas. The world has been destroyed. The world has gone to a disaster. Lifnei ha'elokim, v'temalei ha'aretz chamas. What exactly was happening in the world at that time? If you skip down to the next source, Rashi on Bereishis Vav Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'tishachis, what exactly happened in the world? Lashon erva. This is the language of erva ve'avodazara. Kimo pen teshchitun ki eshchit but kol basar. What kind of sins is it talking about? It's talking about erva ve'avodazara. And Rashi continues, v'timalei ha'aretz chamas. What does that specifically mean? This means gazel. So basically, the world has gone to a disaster. It is a complete and total mess. The people in the world are acting immorally. They are engaging in immoral relationships. They are serving avodah zarah. They are engaged in gezel. They are stealing from one another. This is a complete and total mess. Vayar Elokim et ha'aretz v'hinei nishchita. Hashem sees the earth and he sees the state in which it is in. Ki hishchit kol basar et darko al ha'aretz. That every person is acting badly and their ways are destroying the earth. Vayomer Elokim leNoach, Hashem says to Noach, Kate kol basar bo lifanai, ki malah haaretz chamas. The time has come, it is enough of everybody in this earth, because the world is filled with this disgusting behavior. V'hineni meshchitam et haaretz, and now I am going to destroy the earth. Aselecha tevat atze gopher, take gopher wood and make yourself a teva, a boat. Ta'aset ha'teva ve'kafarta ota, you should make this boat and you should waterproof it. Mibayit u'mibachot bakover, you should take tar and you should put it on the outside and you should put it on the inside. V'zasher ta'aset ota shalosh me'ot ama, this should be 300 cubits. Orach ha'teva chamishim ama rachva, it should be 50 cubits wide. V'shloshim ama kumata, it should be 30 cubits high. I remember one time in school when I was younger, we went outside and we went on the street and we lined up to the point where we saw how huge this teva was. And in our time, it would be quite a feat to build a boat that large, let alone at that time, it was truly a gigantic feat. Tzohar ta'asela teva, you should make a little window out of the top of the teva. Ve'alamatecha lena milamala ve'patacha teva b'tzida tasim tachtim shnayim u'shloshim ta'asa. So he's explaining exactly the dimensions, exactly how the boat should be built. Ve'ani hineni mevia tamabol mayim al ha'aretz. I am going to bring mabol mayim, I am going to bring a flood of water on the land. L'shachit kol basar, to destroy every person asher bo. Everything that is on the earth is going to be drowned. But I will fulfill my promise to you, and you will come to the teva, to this boat. You should take your wife, and you should take your children, and your children's wives, and everyone should come in with you into the teva. Umikol chay, umikol basar, shnayim, mikol tavi et el hateva l'achayot, itcha zachar nekiva yihyu. And you should bring... Hold on one second. There's someone at my door. Sorry, I apologize about that. You should bring with you a male and female pair of each animal. Umeha'uf l'minehu min ha'behema l'mina. Michol remes ha'rumes ha'adama l'minehu shnai mikol yaviyu elecha l'hachayu. You should bring one male and one female of every species so that they can survive as well. Va'ata kach lecha mikol ma'achal asher yuchal va'asafte elecha v'haya lecha v'lachem lecha. You should bring enough food. You should pack up everything that you need, everything that the animals need, bring it with you into the teva. So everything that Hashem had commanded Noah, he did exactly what Hashem had said. This is a pretty crazy instructions to get from Hashem. I would say the Avos and the Himahus definitely did not have easy commandments from Hashem, but I would say Noah maybe had one of the most physically laborious jobs from Hashem, that he had to build this giant teva. He had to take the responsibility that only the things that he brought into that teva were going to survive on earth. The rest of the earth was going to be completely and totally destroyed. That is a huge responsibility, and Hashem says he is going to bring a flood and destroy the world. So my question is, water has typically very beautiful imagery. For example, if you look at the Abarbanel and you skip 11 lines down, if you want to at any point read the rest of the Abarbanel, it is a very interesting explanation of the word mayim. But in line 11, he says, the Amru Chazal, in mayim ela Torah. Mayim, water, is typically compared to Torah. Water is, we know that water purifies, water is Torah. Mayim is life. Whenever we talk about Mayim or water at any other place in the Torah, for example, when we talk about the Be'er of Miriam, we talk about how water sustains life, that we see this practically, but Chazal always expand this to water in Mayim Ela Torah, that it is not just our physical life, it is also what sustains our spiritual life. So my question is, Hashem could have destroyed the world in any way. Hashem could have burnt the earth. When it comes to Sodom and Amorah, he could have destroyed the earth in the same way that he destroyed them. There are so many things that Hashem could have just gone, poof, earth destroyed. What I want to delve in today from three perspectives is, what was the significance of flooding the earth? Why did Hashem flood the earth with water, which we typically see as so positive in such a negative situation? So approach number one is going to be based on the Da'as Zakenim, who is quoting based on a Gemara. So if you look in the Da'as Zakenim, al Bereisha Zayin Vav, V'hama bo haya, Yishlo Shel, there is to ask, Maishna Shehaviha Kadosh Baruch Hu Mabul Yoter Mishar Mako. Why did Hashem specifically choose to use a Mabul, to use a flood, rather than all other possible plagues? V'amru Chazal Amru, B'rotchin Kelkelu, B'rotchin Nadobu. This is quoting from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is the next source. Kederav Chista da Amar Rav Chista, Berotchin Kelkelu, Berotchin Nidovu, Nidonu, Uberotchin Kelkelu, Ba'avira, Uberotchin Nidonu, Ktiv Hacha Veishku Hamayim, Ktiv Hatam, Vechamat HaMelech Shachacha. What was the sin they did? He said that they sinned mostly, as we read in Rashi, it says they engaged in Erva, Avodah Zarah, and Gazel. But he says one of their primary sins was sinning through immoral relationships. And there was this idea at that time that when you engage in a sexual relationship, and especially in an illicit relationship, there was a certain boiling that happened within your body. Again, their understanding or explanation of what they believe to be happening physically during different things, for example, like that feelings came from the kidneys, different things like that were not always exactly how we imagine it. But there was this idea that there was a boiling action that occurred within the body, that your body was heated up when there was a certain level of arousal, that there was a boiling. And so it says through boiling, they sinned, and through boiling, they were judged. So the water was not only water that flooded the earth, but rather it was boiling water that boiled the earth. Amnam yesh laham shil hadavar lemelech shabana dira na'ev lechabura shel avirim. V'tziva lekalkalam v'rivuach v'kol zman shehaya hamelech over derach sham, hayu omdim u'mishachavim keneged hamelech, u'mishabchim lo b'kol gadol pa'am echad shama hamelech kolam. So this is a mashal to a king, that a king created a city and created a beautiful city for blind people, and he provided them with all of their comforts in order to make their life more comfortable. Whenever the king passed by them, the blind people would rise and they would bow down to the king and they would praise his generosity. One time, the king heard their voices and he asked the people who were with him who it was that was shouting, that he passed by the city and he heard that the people were shouting, but he didn't hear exactly what they said, even though we know that they were praising the king. Amar ma'akol azeh ba'aznai, amrulo, him hasumin shetzavita lekalkalam sham v'chinu sim bechol eitz shashumim kol susim shalcha amar ilu hayu ro'in oti alachat kama v'kama hayu mishabchin li. So the king was told that it originated from the blind people that he was providing for so kindly. They added that the people who were informing him, his servants around him, said that the blind people do the same thing whenever they hear your horse galloping in the neighborhood. And he responded by saying, think how much more they would praise me if they could actually see me. He therefore commanded, he turned around and went back to these blind people. He commanded the blind people to all go back to their former locations, to leave from this city where they had been, and to go back to other places. And to put people who were not blind, to put people who could see him into this beautiful city. Because he said, if the blind people are there and they are praising me so greatly and they can't even see the beautiful accommodations that I have provided, how much more so if there were people who could actually see who were living in that city, who could praise me. So he continues and he says, V'sha'al mahin umrim v'amru lo mekalkulin utcha. So what happened though? Well, the next time the king passed by the city and he heard screaming again. But what was it? It was the people who were able to see and they were cursing him. And he asked his servants, he said, why are they cursing me? And they said, every time you pass by, they curse you. They don't do like the blind people that you return to its place. So the king commanded that these people be killed. What is the nimshal? Kacha ulam. This is how the world was. Mitchila hayu kalumayim. She'inam ro'im v'lo shom'in. V'afal pichin hayu mikalsin l'hakadosh baruch hu. Originally, the earth had been filled with water. The earth was filled with water. And this water, even though it couldn't see and it couldn't hear, this is water. It's an inanimate object. It used to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shene emar nas'u naharos Hashem. Nasuna haros kolam. In Tehillim, David HaMelech beautifully describes how the rivers and the pools all sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ilu hayiti borei adam sheshomea v'roa kama kolsin v'kama shvachot hayunot ninli. So Hashem had thought, let me create a human being. If the inanimate object, water, is praising me for all the good that I have provided by putting it on the earth, how much more so a human being who can see and who can hear? So during creation, Hashem cleared the water and he brought in dry land. And he created man in place of the water. So he had the earth grow and prosper and provide plants and last like this for 40 years. Miro tova mardu HaKadosh Baruch Hu shma HaKadosh Baruch Hu mardan v'tziva l'mayim sheyavu alayhem. However, we all know what happened, that it did not go the way that Hashem had planned. V'tziva l'mayim sheyavu alayhem. So Hashem commanded that the water return to its place. V'shvetu yishtafu otam sheshama mipnei harav netan alatniyah v'hamavu hayamayim al ha'aretz. So it was the same as in this story, that just like when the blind people had been in the city, they praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and when Hashem put people who were able to see in their place, rather they cursed Hashem. So too, with the Mayim, when it had covered the face of the earth, the Mayim was doing great. The Mayim sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, when Hashem put people there, they completely destroyed the earth. They did not praise Hashem, rather they cursed it. They were so ungrateful. They destroyed and disobeyed everything Hashem had told them. And therefore, Hashem returned the Mayim to its place. So the Da'at Zakenim is really providing us with the first approach, was it that it was a sort of Mida Kenegan Mida, that why the flood? And he really gives us two approaches. So I'm getting away with like four for the price of three. But his approach is that it was Mida Keneged Mida. They sinned through this boiling within their body and Hashem boiled the water on the earth. But also specifically, why was it a flood? Because the water had been there previously. So this was the natural way of destroying the earth, was the water had been there. Hashem had cleared the water to make way for the human beings. The human beings were not doing a great job on earth. So Hashem was going to reverse what he had done. He is going to refill the water onto the earth. So this first approach is sort of, I think, what's the most logical, is that there was water there previously, so Hashem is going to replace the water. The next approach takes us a little bit deeper. This approach we skip, we already went through the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and we are going to skip Rashi for the moment. Rashi goes into the word, just briefly, Rashi goes into the word mabel, not the actual water, but he talks about the word mabel. And he says that the reason it was a mabel that was brought was to build Bel Es HaOlam, that it was there to, from the root word of to confuse, to mix up, that mabel, specifically this word is used because what Hashem did is he completely mixed up the earth. However, for the second approach, we are going to look in the Torah Tamima Ambaratius, Parak Vav, Pasuk Yad Zayin. Va'ani, Tznu Rabbanan, Dor HaMabel Lo Nizka'u Ela Bishvil Tova HaShehishpia Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why were the Dor HaMabel, the generation of the flood, why were they destroyed? V'hayu Omrim, because it was because they were ungrateful for the good that Hashem had given them. V'hayu Omrim, Klom Anu Tzrichim Lo, we don't need Hashem for anything except maybe for one drop of water. What do we really need Hashem for? Look at this earth that we have. We have vegetation. We have animals. We have produce. We have everything we need. And they would look around and it was very easy for them to forget Hashem. So they would often and regularly say, the only thing we need Hashem for is for one tipa shel geshem. All we need is for Hashem to provide the rain. But really, what big deal is that? It's one tipa shel geshem, one drop of water. Yesh lanu naharot, but really, even what do we even need that for? Even that they would minimize. Yesh lanu naharot v'ma'ayanot, we have rivers and we have streams, sha'anu mistapkim mehem, we really have enough from them. So really, we don't even need Hashem for tipa achad shel mayim. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to them, b'tova shehishpati lahem, through all the good I have given them, rain is the greatest kindness that Hashem can give us. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, you feel it much more palpably. But when the first rain falls, it is a celebration in Israel because there is recognition for how important every single drop of water is. So Hashem says, through the greatest kindness I gave them, they minimized me the most. They need me for water. They need. And what they're going to say, oh, it's one tipa shel water and even it shel geshem, and even that we don't even need. So if they are going to minimize me through this, through that, they are going to be destroyed. Shene emar, v'ani hinani miviyat hamabel al hamayim. So therefore, Hashem said, you minimize my interaction with the world through water, that even something that is clearly so essential from God, you said, what do we even need rain? All we need is our mayanot, our naharot, our rivers and our streams. So through that, you minimize me. Through that, you are going to be judged. So again, let's review our first two approaches. The first approach was it was mida keneged mida, that they had boiled in their bodies and therefore the water was boiling. But why was it water? Like, why specifically was water used? Because the earth had previously been filled with water and now Hashem just returned the water to its original place. The second approach is that of the Torah Tamima, that the Torah Tamima says, B'nai Yisrael, the Dor HaMabel minimized Hashem's presence in the world specifically through water. They used to mock Hashem through water and say, we don't even need Hashem. What does Hashem provide? Just one drop of rain. So Hashem says, I'm going to show them exactly through the way that they minimize my involvement in the world. I am going to destroy the world. That they think one drain of water is nothing too important. I am going to show them that through that water, through that rain, I am going to destroy the world and I am going to destroy all of them within it. So now lastly, we are up to the final approach. And the final approach is based on a Mishnah in Maseches Yoma that develops a general idea about a broader idea of how we think of water. Amar Rabbi Akiva says, this is one of the most famous Mishnayo. It is in the end of Maseches Yoma. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva says, Ashreichem Yisrael, how lucky is B'nai Yisrael, lifnei mi atem mitaharin, before whom are you cleansed, before whom are you purified, umi mitahar eschem, and who purifies you, avicham shabashamayim, Hashem your God in heaven, shene emar vizarakti aleichem mayim tohurim v'tahartem. He quotes from Yechezkel, who says, Vizarakti aleichem mayim tohurim utahartem, I will throw upon you mayim tohurim, pure waters, and you will be purified. The Omer, and it also quotes from Yirmiyahu, Mikva Yisrael Hashem, Ma Mikva Mitahar Es HaTimeim, Afa Kadosh Baruch Hu Mitahar Es Yisrael. we have this idea not only that Torah is, that water is life, that Mayim is Chayim, and that Mayim in Mayim ala Torah, that Mayim is nothing if not to represent Torah, but rather on a deeper level, and one that we often see laced in throughout our lives, is that water represents purity. That we have the idea of a mikvah, that a mikvah is a pool of water that cleanses and purifies, not cleanses, sometimes it gets dirtier when it goes in, but purifies spiritually whatever enters into that water. So we have that with Kalim, we have that with human beings. And the point that I would like to bring out here that is brought down in a few different places is that it was also cleansing and purifying the world. In Yechezkel, it is talking of, let's look at that quote specifically from Yechezkel. Where is the Gemara pulling that out from? In Yechezkel, in Perek Lamed Vav, Psukim Chaf Bet through Chaf Vav. Lachin Amar LeBeis Yisrael, you should say to Beis Yisrael, Ko Amar Hashem, Lo Lema'anchem Ani Oseh Beis Yisrael, Ki Im L'Shem Kadshi. I am not acting for your sake, B'nai Yisrael, rather I am acting for my own Kedusha, Asher Chalaltem B'Gayim, Asher Lo... Asher batim sham, you have been desecrated within the Gayim, within the other nations that you have come to. V'kidashi eshmi hagadol mechulau b'Gayim. You have desecrated my name among the other nations, and I am going to sanctify it. Asher chalaltem b'tochem v'yadu hagayim ki ani Hashem. I am going to show the nations of the world that I am God. V'hikdashti b'chem le'ineichem. When I am glorified in front of your eyes. So what am I going to do for you, B'nai Israel? I am going to gather you in from the other nations, from all the other lands. And I am going to bring you to your land. So after the negativity that we see throughout so much, Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu, and now we are in Yechezkel, finally, we are far along into Yechezkel, and Hashem is promising them the good that is to come. V'kibatzi etchem min ha'aratzot, I will gather you in and bring you to your land. V'zarakti aleichem mayim tahorim utahartem mikol tumateichem umikol galulichem ataheratchem. I am going to purify you from all of your impurities and all of your negative actions and everything that you have done and everything that has happened to you. I am going to throw water upon you, and I am going to purify you. V'natati lachem liv chadash v'ruach chadasha etim b'kirbichem v'hasiroti et liv ha'evem mibsarichem v'natati lachem liv basar. You are going to be completely renewed. I'm going to take out from you your heart of stone, and I'm going to replace within you a heart of flesh. You are going to be purified. You are going to be pure and holy. Even though you have done so many things wrong, I'm going to throw water upon you, and that is going to purify you. So now we have the flood. What is the parallel here? What does this have anything to do with purification? We know that every aspect of what is given over to us in the Torah is relevant and important. For example, the fact that we are given the dimensions of the Teva has relevance and importance. That's not our topic today, but every detail has relevance and importance. So the fact that we are told, Vayihi hagesham al ha'aretz arba'im yom v'arba'im laila. It rains on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, this is no chance. We know that 40 days and 40 nights comes up often throughout Torah. And for anyone who has, we have learned this concept together before, that the concept of purity is connected to the number 40. Because there are 40 sa'ah, there are 40 measures of water in a mikvah. So the idea was that Hashem was not just simply destroying the earth. Yes, we can say that if Hashem just wanted to destroy the earth, Hashem could have gone, earth's gone. If Hashem wanted to just destroy the earth, he could have burnt it. He could have rained down tar on the earth. Anything could have happened. Hashem could have destroyed it in any way. But Hashem didn't want to just destroy the earth. He wanted to rehabilitate the earth. That it was not going to be with these same human beings. Rather, Hashem was going to clear them away. He was going to clear them away. He was going to purify the earth and begin again. So therefore, Hashem takes this 40, like we say, there's 40 sa'a of water in a mikvah. For 40 days and 40 nights, Hashem is going to rain down water, with it, which is the purifying element. Hashem is going to rain it down on the earth. The Sefer Achinuch tells us, "Ubitam hamayim sheyetaru kol tamei, achshev al tzarab shat ki inyan hu kedei shir eha adam et atzmo achar hatvila ki ilu nivra ba'otosha'a." Sefer HaChinuch is talking about the concept of mikvah, that when somebody enters into the mikvah and the tovel, they immerse themselves completely in the water, ki'ilu nivra be'oto sha'ah, and they emerge from that water, it is as if they were born again. Kemo sha'haya olam kulo mayim tarim hayot bo'adam. Because before the earth was created, it was completely covered in water. And from within that water, Hashem separated aside the water, moved aside the water, and brought out all of the creations. The entire earth was covered with water. So the original birth of the world came through the water. So Hashem is saying, I'm not just here to destroy the earth. This is not just a form of punishment. Rather, this is a form of rehabilitation. I don't just want to start again. Rather, I want you to see, especially Noach, to be able to see that there has been this process of rebirth, of recreation, that when one emerges from the water, that when you are going to emerge from this marble, you are going to come out a cleansed new people, that you are going to be the ones to restart the earth through purity. We have cleared away all the Hamas, all of the ugliness, all of the destruction that there was in the world before. And there has been a cleansing. There has been a purification. I think that this understanding is even stronger when we talk about the fact that the water was boiling, that there is not only this spiritual cleansing and purification, but also literally a boiling, a sterilization of the earth, that we are cleansing everything that was there before. And now we are emerging a new human, a new type of people that are going to hopefully move forward with this sense of Kedusha and this sense of Tahara, of purity, that the world has been cleansed from all of its impurities. So that is our final approach, is that why did Hashem specifically use water? Because Hashem was not just there to destroy the world, rather Hashem was there to purify the earth. So let's recap for our 3D parsha of today, Parshas Noach. Why did Hashem destroy the world specifically using a flood? Our first answer was that it was Mida Keneged Mida. They sinned through boiling water and therefore the water was boiling. But most importantly was that the earth had at first been filled with water. So Hashem was just replacing the water with what had been there, replacing the earth with what had been there previously. That water did much better in the position of filling the earth than human beings did. So therefore Hashem returns water to the face of the earth. The next approach that we had was from the Torah Tamima, that Hashem says the people who had been in the world were completely ungrateful, to the extent that they said, we don't need Hashem for anything, not even one drop of water. So Hashem says, specifically the mechanism through which you minimize my presence in the world, I am going to show you my presence in the world. I'm going to judge you exactly in the way that you said I was not there. So they said, we don't even need Hashem for one drop of water. Hashem says, I am going to destroy the earth with water. But lastly, and I think a lesson that we can take away for our lives, is that the third approach is that Hashem was not just there to destroy the earth, rather Hashem was there to purify the earth. That water is the element through which we purify, through which we make something tahor, especially using 40 measures of water. Therefore, Hashem rained down water on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And so Hashem wanted to show us that he was not just destroying the earth and starting again. Rather, he was giving it a level of purity. He was cleansing it. And then we were going to move forward with a new status of Kedusha, of Tahara. And I think that this is an important message for our life, that sometimes there are things that go wrong in our life. Sometimes there are sins that we do. There are mistakes that we make. And I think our natural inclination is sometimes to just totally throw it out, to get rid of it, to not want to have anything to do with it. For example, the first example, that we want to just put the water back where it was. We don't want to explore this new area. If we failed, we just want to get rid of it. But I think the lesson of this third approach is that, like Hashem didn't just say, oh, enough, no more world, we're just destroying it, gone. Rather, Hashem specifically destroyed the world in a way that would help it to continue forward. That he, even in the way of destruction, planted within it the seeds for regrowth. That in a way that we try to move on from mistakes, we can't just squash them. We can't just cast them aside. Rather, it's about thinking about how we can take our actions and use them to grow and be better going forward. So I hope this brought a new light to our understanding of the flood of Noah. And Amir Tashem, may we be able to internalize the messages of these three approaches and move forward as Noah did in a new way and rebuild and grow going forward.